Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 108, recorded Monday, April 21st, 2014. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. There's just one topic on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: worst travel experiences. Coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, where, just as I've gotten my body clock reset onto central daylight time after a week and a half in Beijing, I'm getting geared up to flip AM for PM again, heading over to India and the Philippines at the end of the month, actually Saturday afternoon. Now, this one will be quicker, though. 2 days in transit, 3 days in India, another day in transit, a day in Manila, and then traveling home. So I'm guessing that my body clock won't completely make the 12-hour time flip. I don't know, maybe I'll make it as far as the Hawaiian Aleutian time zone before I head back home. We were in Beijing at the beginning of this month. My son is in Beijing for a semester abroad, so my wife, daughter, and I headed over during my daughter's spring break. A 14-hour direct flight over from O'Hare, and a quick 11.5-hour flight back, thanks to some favorable winds. It is a 13-hour time difference this time of the year. We left around 8 p.m., 8 Thursday night, and touched down about 11 Friday night. And then we picked up the day we lost on the way back. We left Beijing at 10 a.m. and touched down at 9:30 a.m. the same day. Got home, looked at my watch, and saw that I had been up for 18 hours, and it wasn't even noon yet. It made for a very long day. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, at mpeacock, you saw a few things. A Vine video of my street food lunch, a microbrewery that I found deep in one of the hutongs, and my prize purchase, a messenger bag with a picture of Obama, Barack Obama in a Red Guards cap and uniform. I'd heard that these were swept off the streets during Michelle Obama's trip to China last month in March. But I'll tell you, they were back in full force when we were shopping. Check out the show notes for a picture of that bag. The China trip actually broke what had been a really sort of pretty regular commute for me, Chicago to New Orleans. I've made 10 trips down there this year so far, a bit monotonous, but I keep reminding myself that there are worse places to spend time, especially when we were sitting outside last week at some little seafood joint, working our way through a six-pack of Abita Amber beer and about 7 to 8 pounds of boiled crawfish. Beats working in places where Buffalo Wild Wings qualifies as haute cuisine. And New Orleans is in the same time zone as Chicago, though sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Like when I'm staying in one of those Canal Street hotels and folks come rolling in from the French Quarter at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. I don't know, maybe they've ended up on Hawaiian Aleutian time zone too. Following up, so I've received some great listener comments since the last episode. I mean, after so many episodes of asking people to send a text or audio file, I actually received an audio file, an audio comment from longtime Travel Commons listener Lori Hum. Lori sent this to me back in February using some windshield time during her drive between Baton Rouge and Jackson, Mississippi. To tell us about how she tried to sort of jujitsu a winter flying delay by driving.
Hi, Mark. This is Lori Hum, and today I am driving between Baton Rouge and Jackson. I'll spend the day in meetings, and I'll drive back to Baton Rouge tonight. About 2 weeks ago, they canceled all the flights out of Jackson, and because I had actually had the unusual flight arrangement that week, flying into Jackson, spending the night in Atlanta, and then flying out of Atlanta to PBI the next morning, I thought, what the heck? It's 5 hours. Keep my rental car, drive to Atlanta. At least I had a flight from Atlanta back home. So spend another night in Jackson and wait out when I was going to get a flight, or go ahead and keep the forward momentum going. So I chose to drive, which was a great plan for about an hour and a half, until I hit a hazmat incident, aka fuel truck tipped over and spill. And I spent 3 hours in dead stop traffic on I-20 waiting that out. My 5 hour trip ended up turning into about an 8.5-9 hour trip. Pulled into Atlanta around 2 a.m., got up at 6 for my morning flight, and had miscalculated that Atlanta itself was also impacted. And I spent the day waiting things out in Atlanta as each one of my subsequent flights got canceled and canceled and canceled and canceled. And I ended up pulling into home around 9 o'clock on Friday night. So not a great day, but one of the things that certainly made it easier was the fact that as an elite traveler, I have the access to the Sky Clubs. You don't talk about the Sky Clubs too much, but I thought I wanted to ask you about them because I rely on them as a place to kind of decompress. It's really not about the free drinks, because really the free drinks are quite awful, but it's really about just kind of getting away from the noise and pace of the terminal. However, in Atlanta, the Sky Clubs have become very crowded. And I've even had to wait outside of the Sky Club in Terminal B, the Sky Club at B10, a few times because they've hit their fire marshal limit of people in the club. Interestingly enough, Delta seems to have recognized that they have an issue with this and sent an email out to Diamond members telling them that they were going to start changing the rules for who they were going to allow access to the clubs. With their recent push and rollout the last couple of years of their American Express branded card, they were allowing club membership for a reduced rate by showing the card, and you could not help but notice the significant increase in the number of people who were coming in the club and, quite frankly, not really treating it like the place it needs to be. So, I'm a big fan of the clubs, obviously. I really appreciate that as being a loyal status member of Delta that I have access to such a place. And was just curious how much you use the clubs. Glad that you have returned to the podosphere, and I hope that you're enjoying your travels to the Gulf Coast. Thanks, Mark.
Well, if you remember back, February was a tough weather month in what has been a very tough winter, at least for those of us who live east of the Rocky Mountains in North America. I can imagine a lot of travelers had to make similar decisions. I had to make that same decision a bit later in February while on a trip to Lexington, Kentucky. I was doing a day trip, just, you know, down and back from Chicago, and it was a rare warm day, a sort of a nice break from the polar vortex. However, we all know that there's no free lunch, and on this day with the mild temperatures came some howling winds. Now, while I was in my afternoon meeting, I felt my phone vibrating in my jacket pocket. It just kept going off, message after message. I looked at the clock, you know, 2 hours before my flight home. I didn't want to be rude and pull my phone out, but looking out the windows at the trees flailing, I guessed it wasn't United being overenthusiastic about wishing me a good flight. When I finished the meeting, I saw that I was right. United had canceled my flight, which, of course, was the last flight out of Lexington, and had rebooked me on the first flight out the next morning. Now, I didn't have clothes or toiletries for an overnight stay, but I did have a rental car. So I popped open Google Maps, which told me it was 6 hours from the parking lot I was standing in to my house. Now, that felt sort of right on the edge. I looked at the weather forecast. They were predicting high winds into tomorrow. I mean, could they get the plane in for that early morning flight? Forget it. I just decided to drive. Now, the drive started out nice through Kentucky and then into southern Ohio. It was pretty. I even found a Dairy Queen on a gas stop. Things started to deteriorate, though, as I headed north. Rain bucketed down in Indy. I mean, like someone was on the roof pouring a bucket of water onto my windshield. The wipers just couldn't keep up. People were pulling off under overpasses. Now, I just kept going, just gutted it out. North of Indy on I-65, the huge winds were spinning up tornadoes. My wife would call me occasionally, "Are you okay?" Now, looking over, after some point, looking over at the southbound side of I-65, I saw a huge wreck. Probably some wind gust blew a semi into somebody else. Traffic was stopped. I counted. It was a 7-mile backup. There, but for the grace of God, go I thought. But not so fast, because 30 minutes later, traffic in front of me stops. I pull up Google Maps and Waze. I didn't see anything on Google, but Waze showed a line of red. I guess somebody tipped over on this side of the median. Now, while I was looking at Waze, trying to figure out what was happening, a box popped up recommending a reroute. I mean, okay, what the hell? I followed it. It took me off the next exit, ran me down a few two-lane farm roads, and after about 10 minutes, put me back on I-65 on the other side of the wreck. I mean, Waze became a critical piece of travel technology for me. I eventually got home around, about 12:30, 1 a.m., a bit ragged, but happy to be home. And the next morning, I just couldn't help myself. I had to look at that early morning flight. Was it delayed? Did I make the right decision? Pulling up the United app, it indeed went off on time and landed at O'Hare 5 minutes early. Now, Steve Frick, another longtime listener, left a comment on the website adding to a couple of conversations we've been having over the past couple of episodes. Steve says, "As far as travel apps, I still like TripIt just for the fact that it organizes and places everything in my Google Calendar. I have also been using Google Now when I arrive. It lets me know what's going on locally. I've been an Urban Spoon contributor for years and have just this past week started adding reviews to Yelp. We'll see how it goes. As far as what's important when I stay at a hotel, we just recently had this discussion around the office. Breakfast is very important. I spent 2 mornings this week eating powdered eggs at a Fairfield Inn. Not a great way to start my day. A decent workout area is something I also look for. I get really aggravated with the treadmill belts that slip and cause me to wrench my back. I also use the FitDeck app for working out in my room. RunKeeper is another great app for tracking. And finally, I want the desk to have a clear view of the TV. Yes, nerdy, but it's important." You know, Steve, I'm also a big Google Now fan. I replicate my corporate Outlook calendar to my Google calendar. So I like how it'll recognize that I'm flying out, say, out of New Orleans Airport, and then through Google Maps, look at the traffic on the best routing, and then pop up a suggestion when I should leave. At times it feels a little creepy and a little stalkerish, but it can be very handy. Jeffrey Brown left a message on the Travel Commons Facebook page. Jeffrey wrote, "Hi, Mark. I'm a longtime listener, and this is my first message to you. I know you do everything possible to avoid carrying a TSA baggie. So I looked at my own, and I'm really carrying only 3 things that I must have on my trips: toothpaste, deodorant, and shaving cream." Well, Jeff, I tell you, there are some easy ways to avoid liquids. At the start of the liquid ban, I immediately switched from toothpaste to tooth powder. Now, you can typically find that in sort of the patchouli-smelling crunchy granola aisles of Whole Foods. I don't use shaving cream. Instead, I carry a shaving brush, you know, one of the boar bristle brushes. And then I just lather up using a bar of soap that's, you know, that's always there in the bathroom. I started using a solid stick deodorant also. And now, when the liquid ban first started, some TSA screeners were very strict about any sort of semi-solid, like a stick deodorant. I actually recounted one such encounter in an earlier Travel Commons episode. Nowadays, though, they seem to have really loosened up. I never get any hassle about, you know, that stick or anything else in my pack. And indeed, with PreCheck, I mean, the whole baggy thing goes away because you don't have to pull anything out of your bag when you go through the PreCheck lanes. Now, I mentioned a little earlier that if you follow me on Twitter, you got some pictures and tweets from my trip to China. But I tell you, since the Great Firewall blocks Twitter access, as well as a number of other more critical sites, at least to me, like Dropbox and Evernote, I was doing some deep investigation on VPN services before I left for China. VPNs, virtual private networks, they sort of tunnel through the Great Wall by wrapping your internet traffic in encryption and then popping out onto the public internet from servers outside of China, like, say, in Hong Kong or LA or Seattle or Australia. There are a bunch of those VPNs out there. I ended up using ExpressVPN. I looked around. It got good reviews. I liked that it covered my laptop, iPhone, my Android tablet, and that you could have multiple, for the same price, you could have multiple sessions running. You could have, the laptop session plus a tablet session. You didn't have to keep pulling them up and dropping down the connection. It was about $12 a month. And not only did it allow me to tweet and sync Dropbox and everything, but when I popped out from a U.S. server, like I said, like Seattle or L.A., typically went off of one of the West Coast ones, it looked like, to the internet, it looked like I was in the U.S. I pulled a U.S. IP number, and so that allowed me to watch the NCAA March Madness games that CBS was streaming. I mean, hitting the CBS site without the VPN gave me an error, video not available in your region. Popped the VPN up, and hey, I was waking up either way too early or staying up way too late, way too many days watching way too many games. So I don't know. It was great. It was very handy. Some other tech I noticed when I was in China, when I was walking around and riding the subways, I noticed a lot of people using those Samsung Galaxy Notes. That big sort of 6-inch phablet, that kind of tweener between a phone and a tablet. I saw a lot more of those than I've ever seen in the U.S. I don't know, which maybe explains the rumors of a similar size iPhone coming out this fall. There was a lot of available Wi-Fi in bars and restaurants, and most of it was password protected, kind of like what you should do, when you've got your Wi-Fi configured at home. And then, you typically look around on the walls or on the menu, and you'd see the password posted someplace. The only sort of portal protection or portal-style protections, which you see a lot of in the U.S., were just in the big chain hotels and, of course, in Starbucks. And I got to tell you, though, my best purchase, well, I don't know, this purchase and my Obama messenger bag kind of run neck and neck, but one of my best purchases was a 3-in-1 USB phone charger dongle. So at one end it had the USB connection, and then it split out in three. It had a 30-pin iPod iPhone 4 connector, an iPhone 5 Lightning connector, and then a mini USB connector for pretty much everything else. I mean, no more fishing around for the right cable. And it would charge like 2 or 3 devices at the same time. I absolutely love this thing. And I also love how much faster electronics charge overseas when plugged straight into a 220-volt socket without a voltage converter. Coming back home, I'm kind of getting a little antsy about my charge time, so I don't know. I'm kind of trying to figure out how I can piggyback a power strip off of my, off the outlet for my clothes dryer. Hey, and if you have any travel observations, experiences, questions, story, moans, groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, as we all know, is comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone, like Lori, to record and send in an audio comment, Twitter messages to mpeacock. Post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or, like Steve Frick, go old school. Post it on the website at travelcommons.com. So the one topic today on today's Travel Commons podcast, my worst travel experiences. So look, let me just spool this story out. So back in February, on one of my weekly trips down to New Orleans, I caught the last United flight out Sunday night because I had a Monday morning meeting. As typical, it was a United Express flight, a regional jet, and because the pilot was late arriving, it was about 30 minutes late leaving, which, I'll tell you, has gotten to become as close as on time as you're going to get from United Express. So, we take off, I'm catnapping a bit, I'm kind of aware of some commotion in the back of the plane. I wake up, I hear the flight attendant ask if there's a doctor on board, and then I nap again. But a bit later, around midnight, the captain sort of keys his mic and says, "We have a medical emergency, and we're landing in Jackson, Mississippi." Great. And my first thought is, couldn't we have just sort of hung on for 30 more minutes and made it to New Orleans? But that thought was quickly followed by, look, I don't want anybody to die just because I'm feeling inconvenienced. So can we just make this stop quick? So the plane lands. Of course, the airport is closed, so it takes them a bit to rustle up, A, some stairs, B, some security guards to make sure that none of the passengers escape down those stairs into, a secure area of the airport. So about 30 minutes later, the paramedics come on and escort the sick passenger off the plane. She can walk, but it looked like she was having, I would guess, breathing problems at altitude. She had oxygen the whole routine. So the pilot comes on again, apologizes for the inconvenience, says that he's working with his ops center to figure out how much fuel they need to take on for the flight to New Orleans, and he'll get back to us shortly. So I nap a little bit more. Wake up, the pilot's speaking again. It's 1:30 a.m. We figured out how much fuel we need, but because we don't normally fly to this airport, we don't have a relationship with the fuel provider, so the guys in the ops center are trying to figure out how we're going to pay for the fuel that we need to go to New Orleans. 2 a.m., still trying to figure out how to pay for the fuel to go to New Orleans. 3 a.m., we found hotels for you guys tonight, and we'll fly to New Orleans tomorrow morning. Now, we're just trying to find buses to get you to the hotel. So we trundle out of the plane, down the steps, through the deserted terminal, into the baggage claim to collect our luggage, and wait for the bus. 4 a.m., no bus yet. But they've decided to bus us down to New Orleans, a three-hour bus ride. 4:30, the bus finally arrives. Now, it's a nice motor coach. I get in, figure out how to recline my seat a bit so I can nap a bit. 6 a.m., I feel the bus decelerating. I look at my watch. Wait, this is a three-hour bus ride. We've only been on for 90 minutes. We're not there yet? The driver keys his mic. Well, it's time for his break. His break? After just 90 minutes of driving? 8 a.m., I finally get to New Orleans Airport. Well, I got to tell you, that was a fun trip. And as I told that story to friends, family, and colleagues over the next few days, I said, well, this was probably one of my worst travel experiences. One of the worst was the common reply. I mean, what could be worse? I couldn't think of anything right then, but I wasn't sure that there wasn't a worse experience. Now, as I thought more about it, sort of short of kind of surviving a plane crash or being on that Carnival poop cruise that got stranded in the Caribbean, can there really be a worst travel experience? I mean, this trip was probably the worst in-transit experience, though there was that flight from Cleveland to O'Hare that I talked about on an earlier episode where a drunk guy fought with the flight attendant to open the rear door while we were at like 20,000 feet. And then he sat down behind me talking to me, and the whole time I was just waiting for him to puke over my shoulder. Now, while that was a shorter, briefer bad experience, it was a bit more worrisome at the time. Probably as frustrating as this trip, as my Chicago to New Orleans by way of Jackson, was a flight from Detroit to San Francisco a few years ago. The outbound flight was delayed and delayed and delayed. I kept looking at my watch. This was a morning flight out so I could make an afternoon meeting. And then I was flying right back to Detroit that evening so I could make some other commitments. Well, I keep watching, looking at my watch, and then finally, I mean, the flight is so delayed, I'm not going to be able to make this afternoon meeting. So I just stood up to get off the plane. Nope, we can't let you off. We're about ready to push back. We've done all the paperwork. We've done the count. So we pushed back. And now we're waiting on the tarmac. And I just steam. We landed in San Francisco just before boarding was called for my return flight. So I got off the plane, walked down two gates, got on the next plane, and flew home. That was a little frustrating. Or, you know, there was the trip to Brussels where the backpack with our passports was stolen from the train wreck right above me. Another bad trip I talked about on an earlier episode. I mean, that one also left me hugely frustrated, cursing my own stupidity the next 2 days we spent in Brussels waiting for replacement passports. So which one was the worst? I'm not really sure, but since none of them have left me physically or emotionally scarred, at least not that I can tell, I'm not sure really I have to figure it out. Nor do I think I want to, because then I'd have an answer to my mother saying, if this is the worst thing that's ever happened to you. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 108. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. I know the gaps between podcasts have been getting longer, but I don't know. It is what it is. When I have something to say, I write it, and then I do the podcast. So check out the show notes, though, for some pictures. I'll try and put a few more pictures, you know, a couple of things. Maybe that vine. Maybe I'll post that vine of the street food, certainly the Obama messenger bag. And then also there'll be links to the bridge music, as always. If you have a story, again, story, thought, comment, gripe, voice of the traveler, send them along. As always, like I said, text or audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, at mpeacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, and you'll find links at the website. You'll find links to both Twitter and to the Travel Commons wall on Facebook. Or, you know, post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. I really appreciate it. And until the next time that I find something interesting to say and write this thing, travel safe. And thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
On the road, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind. The one woman that I left behind. California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying.